But we thought we'd have it up here because we were kind of dividing our forces. Half of us were down there and half of us were up here. And we felt like both things were a little bit incomplete. So we're going to do this every Tuesday night. And those of you who want to come early for the yoga class or come for the integrated yoga class, we'll get to find out information about the Vedic culture of India. This talk is going to be, probably it'll stretch out over several different segments, but it's about the Goswamis of Vrindavan. I'm sure you've all heard about Swamis. You've heard the term Swami. Swami means one who basically lives a life of traveling and preaching and doesn't get tied down to family affair. The Go in front of the word Swamis refers to the senses. So a Goswamin is one who controls his senses. And Vrindavan is like our Bethlehem. Just like in Christianity, Christ appeared 2,000 years ago in a place called Bethlehem, and he took his birth from Mary. So in Vedic culture, the Lord himself is deemed to have appeared 5,200 years ago in a place in India called Vrindavan. And Vrinda, I don't know if you can see it. Where's it? See this little bush here on the bench there? That's a tulsi, and that's considered to be a sacred sort of a bush in India. Although it's immobile, and it's in a lower form of life, the soul, the spirit inside of the tulsi, wherever she's found, is considered to be fully absorbed in trance upon God. So Vrinda refers to the tulsi, and Van means forest. So the place where the Lord appears is called Vrindavan, or it's a forest of tulsis. And to spiritualists, aspiring spiritualists, Vrindavan, and it's, I'll show you where it is, it's about 125 kilometers south of Delhi, is the highest paradise on earth because here, Krishna reveled in pastimes of love 5,000 years ago. His flute, you can see Krishna playing his flute on the altar there, maddened the animate and inanimate with the bliss of divine love. Brahma, who's the creator of the universe, thought that this place is so special that he wanted to roll into the dust and get himself purified and consecrated. Just like if you went to Bethlehem, it might occur to you that 2,000 years ago, Jesus Christ walked on this earth, and there's a good chance that if you pick up a handful of dust, that at least one of those particles was touched by the feet of Christ. And so you would, in a mood of thinking of yourself as a servant of the Lord, you might put that dust on your head or roll on it, or in some way indicate that it was blessing you. So similarly, the Lord of the universe, Lord Brahma, says that he wants to roll in the dust of this place called Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, many, many saints have gone there, they've lived there, they've chanted, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And they've realized the supreme goal of life. Now this is a video, which I'm not going to show because I don't have the sound quite powerful enough for it. But here's Vrindavan. It's 135 kilometers south of Delhi, 55 kilometers north of Agra. About 5 years ago, we were on the train, Jai Krishna and I were on the train going from Ahmedabad to Mathura. You get down at Mathura, Krishna's birthplace, and then you have a 25-minute auto rickshaw ride to Vrindavan. So we were given separate cars. His seat was in a two cars down from me, and mine was two cars down from him. And I was sleeping on the upper berth. And the guy who sold us the tickets, he told us that we would get into Mathura at 8 o'clock in the evening. So the train pulled to a stop at 7, and I was in the upper berth, and I didn't bother to look at what station we're in. And when you're in the upper berth, you can't exactly see the signs. You have to kind of be low to see the signs. So I didn't get off the train. Meanwhile, three cars down, Jai Krishna is also kind of kicking back. And the people said, he'd been talking to them. He said he was going to Mathura, Vrindavan. And they said, this is your stop. And he said, oh, I thought it wasn't until 8 o'clock. They said, no, no, you were misinformed. This is the stop, right? So he got off, and he's walking forward to tell me, just in case I was, and the train starts moving. And this was Jai Krishna's first trip to India. And he was all alone on a train platform. And we'd been in Udaipur for 4 days, and he bought this beautiful painting in Udaipur. He actually spent a bit of money for it, like $80 or $90. And he left it, in all the hustle and bustle, he left it on the train. So he lost his painting, he lost his guru, he lost his childhood companion. He was on his own. Meanwhile, I'm blissfully on my way to Agra. And I get down from the train an hour later. I don't know. I'm looking around. Where's Jai Krishna? What happened to him? I don't know. Well, anyway, I'll go to Vrindavan. So I said to the rickshaw waller, I said, how much is it to go to Vrindavan? And usually it's about 50 rupees or a dollar. And the guy's figuring, he comes up with a figure that's like $35. I said, you rip off, you know, I'm not going to go with you. So I go to the next guy, everyone's coming up with the same, like hundreds of thousands of rupees. And then I said, where am I anyway? I said, you're in Agra. So I have personal experience that it's 55 kilometers north of Agra, because I went to Agra by mistake. And I thought, okay, as long as I'm here, I'll go and see the Taj Mahal. But then I started to walk off the train platform, and there are lights lighting up the train platform, but the city was dark, and it was like 11 o'clock, it was like 9 o'clock at night. I said, no, I don't think I'm going to wander into that pitch black city at this time. So I got a room at the train station and then just took the 6 a.m. train back to Vrindavan, where I was reunited with Jai Krishna. And here you have a map. Mathura is the birthplace of Krishna. And then he was taken to Gokul because Kamsa, the evil tyrant, was trying to kill all the firstborn children, knowing that his own killer had appeared in Mathura. And so Krishna was whisked away to Gokula Vrindavan, and that area is called Braja Mandala. And in that area, Krishna performed, he was on the planet for 125 years. He performed his childhood pastimes for the first 13 years or so in this area. You can see baby Krishna seated on the lap of his mother Yashoda. And these childhood pastimes are the most sweet pastimes of the Lord. They're the most sweet, they're the most relishable, and they're the most celebrated. Just like all of us, you know, we were so much cuter when we were kids, you know. People have got, they've got pictures and they've got videos and all the things that we did when we were learning how to walk and falling down and being all kind of spastic. And they don't have that many pictures of us now that we're teens and are in our 20s and even older. So after Lord Krishna disappeared from the planet about 5,100 years ago, things kind of fell into disarray. Areas became overgrown. The area was restored by Lord Krishna's grandson, Brajanabha. However, after that, the Muslims, in about 1000 AD, the Muslims started making incursions into India. And they were not particularly sympathetic or friendly to the Vedic culture of India. In 1017, Muhammad Ghazni, he demolished the birthplace temple of Lord Krishna. This shows the extent of his conquests. And Delhi's here, and Krishna's birthplace is here. So he conquered into India this far, and it was just on the cusp, or just on the margin of his conquered areas. So he smashed down the place where Krishna had been born. There was a huge, huge temple there, and he built a mosque instead. This was what the Muslims did quite frequently. They would tear down a holy temple, and they would build a mosque on the location. Or even worse, they would build a tomb. The Taj Mahal was a studied insult to the Hindu culture because that had been a holy place, but Shahjahan built a tomb for his wife who died giving birth to, I think, her ninth child. And that's how the Taj Mahal was built, as a tomb over a Hindu holy place. Then throughout 1488 to 1516, during the reign of Sikandar Lodi, he demolished temples all over northern India, and he prohibited the worship of the deity, such as you see here. And the deities themselves, the priests, because they thought the Muslims would come and smash the deities, many of the deities were buried or hidden, and they were put into the jungle. So again, this holy place of Vrindavan became overgrown with jungles, and then a lot of gangs and a lot of thieves lived in the area. So when Krishna came again as God, he appeared 5,100 years ago. Then he appeared 500 years ago again as his own devotee. So Krishna appears more with the opulence and the majesty of the Godhead. Whereas when he appears 500 years ago as Lord Chaitanya, he's more like a Christ-like figure. He lives a very simple life. He's very saintly. He's very renounced. And he's spreading the gospel of love. But Chaitanya is Krishna himself. And in his previous incarnation, he sported with the cows and the deer and the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So it broke Lord Chaitanya's heart, who was Krishna, that Vrindavan had gotten all overgrown into jungle and gangs and thieves and rogues there. So when the Lord appears, he doesn't appear by himself. Just like if the President of the United States were to come to Provo, he wouldn't just, you know, get off of a train with his luggage. he'd have his own train, and he'd have security people, press people, he'd have his own dining car, he'd have all these people getting off with him, his old entourage. Wherever you see a powerful person, there's always a retinue. That's an indication of their power. There are secretaries, there are press people, there are all kinds of media people, and so on and so forth. So when God descends from the spiritual world to this world, he doesn't come alone. He comes with his associates. And some of those associates, Lord Chaitanya told them. Now, he was active on the east coast of India. And Vrindavan is like 1,500 miles towards the west. So he wanted that Vrindavan be reclaimed and renovated. And so some angels, you might call them, or eternally Nityasiddha associates of the Lord descended with him. And he charged them to go to Vrindavan. And in those days, there were no trains, there were no planes, there were no vehicles. You had to walk. And on the way, you would just beg for food. So it would take months and months and months. And there were many dangers as well. So, and nevertheless, he had associates, and these are called the Goswamins of Vrindavan. They're the subject of our little talk, which will go till 1:45 this afternoon, this evening. And they are described in the following ways. They reclaimed Vrindavan. They showed the sweetest and smoothest path of bhakti, which is how to love God unreservedly, unconditionally, and uninterruptedly. They built modern Vrindavan with temples, ponds, groves, and ghats, or bathing places. They wrote extensively to systematize the path of bhakti yoga, and they tried by their own example to set others on the same path. So the first of those Goswamins is Lokanath Goswami. He grew up in Bengal as a childhood friend of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They went to the same school. They had the same teacher, Gangadas Pandit. And Lord Chaitanya went back to his hometown of Navadvip after their schooling was over. And he started this movement of chanting Hare Krishna. He was the great apostle of love of God. And Lokanath Goswami, he gradually extricated himself from his social and familial and neighborly duties so that he could, after many years, go and join Lord Chaitanya. And he just dreamed. He would just dream night and day of joining, extricating himself from his local responsibilities, and joining Lord Chaitanya in his great evangelical preaching mission. And this was his dream. And he thought that when he would get there, his life would be fulfilled. And finally, after many years, he did it. He took the several days trek. He appeared before Lord Chaitanya. He bowed down. They had a wonderful reunion. And his idea, this was it. I'm here. I'm going to spend the rest of my life with Lord Chaitanya. It's perfect. Whatever he asks me to do, I'll do it. I could desire nothing else. And what did Lord Chaitanya do? After 1 or 2 days, he said, you go to Vrindavan, 1,500 miles away. And it just about broke Lokanath's heart. He says, it took me 10 years to get to your side. It's a dream come true. It's all I ever wanted was just to be with you. And after 2 days, you're sending me to Vrindavan, 1,500 miles away, all by myself, into the jungle where there's thieves and rogues, to try and reclaim and excavate the pastimes of Krishna from 5,000 years. Why are you doing? What did I do to you? What did I do wrong? Why are you pushing me away? And Lord Chaitanya said, I am not pushing you away. I am keeping you close to my heart, because my heart is in Vrindavan. And the project which is most dear to my heart is reclaiming and restoring those places of Krishna's pastimes. And here he says to Lokanath, everyone practices sadhana. That's getting up early in the morning, chanting, offering your food, and all the practices of bhakti yoga. Everybody practices sadhana to achieve his own desired end, but blessed are they who also help others to attain it. Even a day's stay in Vrindavan enables a man to achieve prema, or pure love of God. If you want my happiness, you should go. So here he's talking about the difference between people who engage in spiritual life for their own salvation and for those who give up some of their comforts and preconceptions in order to assist others. So Lord Chaitanya said, that Vrindavan is so holy, it's so sacred. If you just came in recently, it's like our Bethlehem. It's a place where the Lord appeared thousands of years ago. It's so sacred that even if someone spends a day in Vrindavan with a pure heart, they can get pure love of God. And so by going and excavating the place of pastimes in Vrindavan, Lord Chaitanya says, you are doing good to others and you'll also do the best good to yourself. So Lokanath had a friend named Bhugarbha, and they were like two bodies, one soul. They were inseparable throughout their lives, and they both lived up to 100 years old. It took them 3 months walking over the roads to reach Vrindavan, doing bhiksha. Bhiksha means you just ask, can you give me a little rice? Can you give me a little milk? Begging. The forests that they traveled through were thick, impassable. There were wild animals. There were tribals who neither knew anything nor cared about holy places. And when they got there, it was like you needed a machete even to go here and there. And I mean, there were thousands of places where Krishna, about 4,500 years previously, had performed all of his wonderful transcendental pastimes. But all there was jungle. And all they had was some scriptural references and some cross-referencing to be able to find these hundreds and hundreds of places, clean them up, convince wealthy people to build little monuments and so on, walkways and so on and so forth, to basically civilize the whole area. And all they had was some vague scriptural references. But they did also have another thing, their own purity and their own transcendental vision. So they had certain intuitions by which they would also be guided in connection with the scriptural references. So this is Vrindadevi, and she's the mistress, she's the goddess of Vrindavan. She's the personification of Tulsi. And this is a quote, I believe, from her. Beloved of Krishna, an organizer and supporter. Oh, this is Lokanath when he got there after 3 months of journey, a lot of difficulties. He comes to a jungle. It's just overgrown, unorganized. He's got a few vague scriptural references. It's an impossible task to find even one of these places, what to speak of the hundreds and hundreds. So what he does is he bows down to the local divinity, Vrindadevi. And it was her who 5,000 years ago organized the breezes, the water, the leaves, the flowers. She organized everything for the promotion of Krishna's divine eternal pastimes with his devotees. So she knows where everything was because she was there. And Lokanath Swami gets down on his knees and he prays, beloved of Krishna, an organizer and supporter of his divine lila or pastimes, how long will you keep the places of those pastimes hidden? Without your mercy, it is not possible to see these holy places bearing within their bosom the sweet memory of the divine lila of Krishna. Krishna, by the way, is a name for God, which means all attractive. And one day, a tribal man came to Lokanath and gave him a Krishna deity. I think we've got a picture of it here. It had been in the bottom of a lake. Now, because the Muslims were going about smashing deities and destroying temples, a lot of deities were hidden in the jungles or buried. And so during the course of excavating Vrindavan, every once in a while, you'd come up with a deity, which was thousands and thousands of years old. The temple of that deity would have been smashed by the Muslims. But this is a very, very sacred deity, which many, many people worshipped millennium ago. And one such deity was Radha Vinod, who was found in the bottom of a ghat, a bathing place. And Sri Lokan, you know, someone may think the deity is just made of stone or wood. But if you think that, then it says that the deity will be stone or wood for you. But if you see the deity of Krishna with eyes anointed with the salve of love, the deity is alive. The deity is not inanimate. The deity is animate to those who approach the deity with love. So as soon as he took possession of the deity says to Sri Lokanath, I'm hungry. Well, he's been at the bottom of a lake for 4,000 years. That's understandable, right? I mean, he's God. God's never hungry. But this is all about love. I mean, in the spiritual world, when you go to the spiritual world, you'll eat. You'll eat. But you won't need to eat because you'll have a spiritual body. So you don't need to eat. And the stuff you eat won't be like matter. It won't be made of earth and air. But you'll eat. Why will you eat? Why will you eat? Because that's when we share. association, isn't it? That's when we're sometimes at our most intimate with our families. You know, you have a family and you might only have one rule. You might only have one rule. Be there on time for dinner, right? Why? Because it's a time of togetherness. It's a time to relish one's and another's association. So Radhavinod wants to have exchange with his devotees so he doesn't waste any time. He says, I'm hungry. So give me something to eat. And so Sri Lokanath himself is just living on roots and leaves. You know, sometimes he takes some leaves from a tree. He'll take some water. He'll light a fire. And he'll boil the leaves and he'll drink the water. That's basically what he does. In no house, moving from tree to tree, different tree every night, and the deity is demanding, I'm hungry, like that. So, it says here, the devotee's love makes Krishna forget he's God, and he behaves towards him like a child. In other words, Radhavinod is not hankering after food, he's hankering after service. He's hankering to revive that ancient relationship with his particular devotee. So his impatience and his impetuosity is not to be compared with the lusty impatience and impetuosity of an ordinary conditioned soul. His impatience, his impetuosity has to do with love. Because although God is all supreme and completely self-sufficient, he needs nothing, the nature of love is that it always wants more. The more love you get, the more that love demands. The more love you have, the more you crave it. So even God is addicted to love. And although he has millions and millions and trillions and zillions of liberated souls already loving him and engaging in reciprocal relationships, he always wants more. He's always impatient. So when he reconnects with an ancient devotee, an associate like Lokanath, he says, I'm hungry. He wants to get right back into that relationship of love. So this is the deity. This is a picture of the deity. Of course, at that time, now the deity is in a beautiful temple. The deity is called Radha Gokulananda. And this is a picture of the deity. Of course, on the left is Krishna, darkish with a flute. And on the right is Srimati Radharani, same as you see here. But in those days, there were no temples. It was Lokanath's job to find places where temples could be built. And so what he did was he took the deity. You see, it's a small deity. He put the deity in a bag around his neck. And with the blessings of Tulsi, and with the deity, with his own spiritual purity, and with some scriptural references, he uncovered, imagine this, this is not ordinary. No ordinary person could even find one place. But with all these different elements and with divine guidance and with Radha Devan, he uncovered 333 forests and holy places connected with Krishna Leela. Amazing, huh? Then, gradually, he and Bhugarbha were the first, and they were there for a number of years, and this is what they accomplished. Then, gradually, Lord Chaitanya was sending more from Bengal and Orissa out to Vrindavan. So gradually Lokanath and Bhugarbha were joined by other great saints who also assisted in the reclamation of the places of pastimes and who were ideal saintly practitioners themselves and who wrote many, many books on the science of bhakti yoga. So other Goswamis came. Then Lokanath, he kind of devoted himself more and more to the worship of his Radha Vinod deity. Now, apparently at some point in time, he had a little place with a little kitchen. Things are evolving now in Vrindavan. The jungles are being tamed. And the place of pilgrimage is emerging from this wild place. So once, Lokanath was sitting in the room, and he had someone to assist him. He was very aged at that time. And the assistant was cooking for the devotee. Okay. Now the deity, the Krishna deity, doesn't just demand service from the devotees, but enjoys serving the devotees. It's like a competition. The devotees serve the Lord, and then the Lord serves the devotee. And then the devotee says, I can't take service from God. And then he does more service. And God says, you can't stop me. I hanker after reciprocating with you. So the Lord, Radha-Vinod, he thought that the servant wasn't cooking fast enough or efficiently, and he wanted to do something for his devotee. So he came into the kitchen, assumed the form of Lokanath, and he's standing beside the servant. They're making chapatis and spicing the dal and chaunching the curries and all like that. And then the servant is going to the pantry to get some spices, and he looks in the other room. There's Lokanath sitting there. And then he says, "Who's this?" or if that's Lokanath, "Who's that?" You know, he was like, "There's two of them. There's two of them." And one of them was the Krishna deity cooking in the kitchen along with him to please his devotees. So here is the, actually Lokanath is on the right. In India, of course, as you may know, ordinary people's bodies are burned. Because a body that's not particularly dedicated in the service of the Lord, there's no reason to preserve it or, you know, memorialize it or anything. But the bodies of people who are self-realized and who are engaged in the service of the Lord 24 hours a day, those are preserved, they're buried, and there's generally a little shrine atop of that called a samadhi mandir. When a self-realized soul dies, they consider that they don't actually die, but they go into samadhi. They've been absorbed in serving the Lord during their life, and so after death, they go to the spiritual world. And that absorption is called samadhi. And then mandir means a place which is worshipable. So these little memorials here, people go and they touch their heads to the thing and they chant and they basically worship the saints who have led, who have gone, shown us the path back to Godhead. So Lokanath is on the right. In the center is the samadhi mandir of Narottam Das Thakur, who was the only disciple, the only initiated disciple of Lokanath. And then on the left is Vishwanath Chakravarti, who was the great commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam. More on Narottam Das next week. He's one of the Goswamis of Vrindavan. So I believe it was in 1533 that Lord Chaitanya, after 48 years on the planet, left the world in Jagannath Puri and went back to the spiritual world. I believe that was in 1533. Lord Chaitanya, the great head of the movement, he departed and went back to the spiritual world. So, it says here, many great Vaishnavas had come to Vrindavan and lived in... By now, Vrindavan was well on its way to being uncovered, and there were many Vaishnavas and more arriving every day. It had become a thriving center of Vaishnav community and pilgrimage site. Vrindavan was renovated, pilgrims are coming, and then after Lord Chaitanya left, the Vaishnavas started dying, one after another, after another, after another, after another, until there were only four of what you might call the old guard, the contemporaries of Lord Chaitanya. Lokanath himself, Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, as well as Bhugarbha. But there was a whole nother wave now, a whole nother wave of newcomers, younger, in their 20s and in their 30s, and all fired up. Among them were Narottam, Shyamananda, and Srinivas, and they had been sent to Vrindavan, and then Lord Chaitanya wanted them to go back to Bengal, and there were many books. In those days, they didn't have the press. When was Guggenheim Press? That was also in the 1500s, but at least it didn't get to India. All these valuable books had been written out by hand, and there was a whole cartload of books pulled by oxen, and those books were meant to be taken to Bengal by these three young apostles, Narottam, Shyamananda, and Srinivas. But Narottam had not yet been initiated. And it's considered that you need to be initiated by a bona fide guru to have the mercy of the Lord so that you can preach to maximum effectiveness. So they wanted to get Narottam initiated. And the only one that he really wanted to get initiated by was by Lokanath. But Lokanath was humble and he said, "I'll never take a disciple." He said, "I'll never act as a guru to a disciple." And that was his vow. So he refused Narottam. He refused him, 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 he refused him. And Narottam simply served him from a distance. He already had taken him as his guru in his heart, but Lokanath would not allow any personal visible service. So Lokanath was a very, very old man at this time, and he would go into the woods and do his early morning evacuation. And then he would come by 24 hours later, and he would see that someone had tidied up the whole area and even cleaned up his stools. And he didn't think much of it, but it went on for over almost a year. Almost, that who is doing this? First he thought it was some hired person or so on and so forth. And then he became curious that who is actually doing this. So he hid one day and he saw Narottam coming. And now Narottam was the son of a king. Narottam was like Donald Trump's son or something like that. He was like young Bill Gates. That's how rich he was and what his lineage was. He was son of King Krishnananda of Ketur. He was fabulously wealthy. And here he was tidying up after Lokanath, after he'd performed his ablutions. And Lokanath saw this. And he chastised him very, very severely. And he said, "You cannot do this. I will not. I have vowed not." But then he went to sleep and Krishna appeared to him in a dream. And he said, "If you will just make one exception in your lifetime, if you will initiate this young man, you will not be disappointed." So he initiated him as Narottam Das Thakur. And Narottam Das Thakur is one of the great, great Vaishnavas. We have our song book. Half of the songs are written by Narottam Das Thakur. He was a beautiful preacher. He was a writer. He was a beautiful singer. And we'll talk more about him later on in the series. And in fact, he was so learned that after initiation, after he got Diksha, he became known as Narottam Das Thakur, which means a very, very learned person. So Sri Lokanath, and you know the irony of it was that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came as a young man to join Chaitanya with the dream of serving by the side of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya had endowed him with this most dearest project of renovating Vrindavan and sent him away after only 2 days together, he never saw Lord Chaitanya again in his lifetime in the flesh. And he lived 100 years. He never saw Lord Chaitanya physically. That was the last time he saw Lord Chaitanya. Although Lord Chaitanya did visit Vrindavan once, Lokanath was out at the time and did not meet him again. So Lord Chaitanya had passed away in 1533. So 50 years after Lord Chaitanya passed away at the age of 48, Sri Lokanath passed away at the age of 100 years. And this is, again, another picture of his samadhi, another picture, and his deity, Radha Vinod, is installed in a temple which was founded by Lokanath called Radha Gokulananda. And that's just another name of Radha Vinod. And here are the deities, Radha Gokulananda, and Lokanath is right here. This is Lokanath, and this is Vishwanath Chakravarti. This is Radha Vinod and Srimati Radharani. And you can visit that temple and you can worship that deity even today. Neither Lokanath nor Bhugarbha wrote any books, but they taught much to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. Rupa and Sanatan, between the two of them, they maybe wrote 200 books. And they were taught and they were instructed by Sri Lokanath Goswami. And then Krishnadas Kaviraj, who wrote the great biography of Lord Chaitanya's later life called the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that Lokanath coached him and helped him considerably in writing the great Bengali classic Chaitanya Charitamrita. So next week we'll talk about two more of the Goswamis of Vrindavan called Sanatan and Rupa. But for now, we give it over to your yoga instructors, Sri Hanuman and Wendy. Thank you very much.